Hi, my name is Bonnie. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Okay. I met Al-Anon about 10 years ago. And that was because my boyfriend at the time went to a clinic. And we came there for an introduction for, that he was capable of the clinic. And they were thinking that I was coming to the clinic because I was not looking that very well and stressed. He could stay there for like 6 weeks, and he went to meetings, the English church, and he had a really recognition there, and they told me that that was something for me as well. I went to Al-Anon, and I thought, well, I'm going to Al-Anon, I'm going to learn how to fix him. The advice was to go at least 6 times and just see if Al-Anon is something for me. And at the time, it was more like a tea party, just drinking tea, no literature, just complaining about what he'd done this week, that it was unbearable. And for a couple of years, because I lost counting, I think it was 10 years ago, but I don't know for sure anymore. But then another fellow came into the program, and she had the same thing with as my boyfriend at the time, because my boyfriend was also using drugs, and the people who were there with the tea party only had alcoholism. And I was thinking I was missing something, because... Yeah, you could relate, but there was something I missed. And she had still had a boyfriend, and I went with them to another meeting. And there was structure, and there was a format, and there was respect, and they were laughing, and they had fun. And I'm like, oh, I want that too. Mm-hmm. And that's where my recovery began, and that's like 5 years ago or so. And I got a sponsor. I did service, a lot of service, and I did the steps. And with the steps, I recovered the new me, because I didn't know who I was, because I was living for my addict in my life. I did everything for him, paid bills, arranged his driver's license because he didn't have one, and. I took all his responsibility on my name, and it was also I found out that I am a child that comes from a dysfunctional home. My dad abused me when I was 8, and we never talked about it. And when I was trying to approach my parents, said, "Hey, is something wrong here?" They said, "No, it's not true. He did it because of out of love." So my inner gut was wiped off the table right away, and I didn't have the guts to tell anyone else, because I was afraid that they wouldn't believe me, that I was going to be alone for the rest of my life. So I started smoking and stealing money from my parents. I steal money from my aunt and my grandma. My dad had a silver coin collection of the money, and I didn't know. I just, he likes the ages, And I just spend it all just for cigarettes. Now I can laugh about it, but when he got me, it was not funny. And then I met my ex-boyfriend now, but I was 16, and I thought I knew everything. I knew I could stand the world, and he was 23, and he had an apartment already. And my dad found out that he was not that nice person for me, and then my parents told me, "You can choose between him or us." I was like, "Okay, bye." I quickly decided to move out, and I was 17. And I didn't finish school because I had to work for the money. And soon the misery starts, and my mothering starts there as well. And I went to bars, to get him home, and eventually I was fooling myself and for other people in the bar, and because I was making a real big fight, and he didn't come, and I could leave alone again. We went to once upon a time to a holiday in Greece, and he couldn't find drugs there, only alcohol. And at one night he was trying to push me with that and all off the balcony, and I didn't dare to speak to him, you know, because I was in a strange country and I didn't want to phone my parents because, only when I need someone and when I have misery, I was calling someone, and when I was doing good, I didn't. So I was just, from shame, I didn't really want to bother someone. I was losing friends, because also with friends I was calling them when we broke off. We broke off a couple of times. I lost counting, and that was because I was believing that his stories. He needed me and I needed him. We were just two sick people, I think. But at that time, I didn't see it. And I bought everything that he told me. And so his dream was to drive a big American car, and we just get a loan for his big American car. And now it didn't even had gasoline. It was just it was only gasoline, not gas. So it was 1 at 3 that it was like the money was in the car, you know. Just it was just show off. It was really I just did everything that he liked, and I didn't have an opinion at all. Then he became a dealer. Because it was easy for him, of course, and I allowed it. A lot of people came in my home, and I don't even know why, you know, but just it was, yeah. There were a lot of people in my house. They stayed in my house. I had to work. He didn't do that anymore, and they stayed, you know, day and night. And I didn't have any life anymore. Even friends came in living with us because I felt sorry for them. And wasn't thinking about me. I really lost myself in the disease. The disease really affected me. I really thought that he was the problem, and I didn't have a problem. So I was just, if he only gets clean, then the problem is solved. Then we can be happy, you know. If only he do this or do that. I even tried, you know, if you really love me, you will get clean and sober, and otherwise I will leave you. Well, he didn't, but I didn't as well. I made things worse. I really made things worse. That's what I learned in Al-Anon, that my behavior was sick as well. And that I was reacting, not acting. Yeah, I just did some writing on my paper so that if I have a blackout, you know, but I'm further already. But, you know, the 12 steps really, step one, that I had to admit that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. I really had resentment to step one, you know. I was powerless over alcohol, but my life was not unmanageable. I was keeping the household, you know. I was paying the bills. I was working. He did nothing. Yeah, fishing. He was hooked on fishing. You know, and... But doing the steps and the questions with my sponsor and listening to other people sharing their experience, you know, I'm doing that. You know, my ex-boyfriend, at the time my boyfriend, he was cheating on me, and I went to hookers and I didn't believe it, you know, but I had something, I had some gut, you know, and I went to the laundry and I sniffed his laundry just to make sure if he was cheating on me, yes or no. You know, that was crazy. That was, my life was unmanageable. That was really sick behavior. I went to the garbage, you know, just to see if he is, how do you say it, the napkin that he puts in the plastic bag of the thingies, you know, just to hide it, you know. And I went to the trash to see if that was true, because other people would do that. I was really, really sick, and I didn't even know it. And so I was stopped doing step one and then step two, you know, and then... I had to believe in a higher power, you know. And when we were, when I was a small child, we went to church, but I went to the how do you say it in English? The singing thing at the background, you know. I was
choir.
Yeah, thank you. I was in the choir just to be busy. I didn't believe in God, because if there was a God, why is there so much misery in the world? But just because I didn't believe, there was the misery in my life, and I had to find that out as well. and that I could not fix anyone except me. So, and step three, I had to believe that he did it, that he could. And that was very hard, because then I had to let go of control. And that's my major character defect. You know, I'm over-responsible to others. I'm approval-seeking, and I want to have control. That came out of my step four. I did my step four in a half year or something, in my moral inventory. I had more than 62 people on the list, and I'm like, whoa, shit, that's much. For an alarm, you know. But I really had a lot of resentments, and that's when I found out that that my dad was really sick. His behavior was really sick. He was a workaholic, and I found out he's a narcissist, and I was living at, when I was doing my step four, I was living at my parents' at the moment, because I broke up with my ex-boyfriend, and at that time I didn't know that I was breaking up definitely, because we split up so many times. But I had a program, and I started the program, and then I did have time for myself, so I could start step four. And with my dad, it was really not fun anymore to live with him in his house, because he didn't recognize his illness, his disease, and I saw it more clearer and clearer and clearer. And it was really amazed that I managed to stay there for 3 years. And then I got my own place. When my ex-boyfriend and I split it up for the last time, he couldn't believe that I was gone. And he was powerless, and powerlessness get into aggression in his, when he was powerless, he would get aggressive. And he really tried everything. Because and when I said no, he was trying, if I'm doing this, then she will come back to me, so I'm going to do it. But it get worse and worse and worse, because I was setting my boundaries. I was learning in NLP to set boundaries, you know, just to stand up for myself. But when I did, but his aggression got worse and worse. I had to call the police. He was threatening me at work. My co-workers were afraid of him. He was really violent. He was armed. And I was really afraid that he was going to shoot, you know. He threatened that he would do it, and normally I would think, yeah, sure, you're right, but I knew he killed someone. So I know it's, you know, I was really afraid, and he knew it, and he just took advantage of that. And he was trying to kill, he said he would try to kill my family, and we had a dog together, and he would take her away from me, and just to get what he wanted. But this time I took another phone number, and I didn't pick up the phone when he rang at my parents' home. And I went to the police, and at first I didn't believe that they went to him and talked to him, you know, that it makes sense, because it was quiet. I thought, well, if the police is going to talk to him, he's so angry that he's going to, you know, just drive the car into my house. But I didn't hear anything, so I didn't believe the police. But why should I lie, you know? But my thinking says otherwise. So, and afterwards, when it finally got quiet, he got an overdose. Again, there was a second time. The first time that I found him, he nearly died. The ambulance came in, and he stopped breathing. He was white already. And so the second time, I'm like, oh, and he got an overdose, and I was not near him. You know, I couldn't do anything. So that made me realize that I'm really powerless. And that I can just let go and let God. And it doesn't matter if I'm near him, yes or no, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I just don't have control about any other person. And that gave me strength, really gave me strength. It really sounds really weird, someone getting an overdose and I get strength. But it really gave me strength, just to move on and to work on myself. And I really had a low self-esteem, so it really took a while, a really long while. I really had to rebuild my friends and family, and now at this stage I don't really have a family at all. I finished my 12 steps, and I did the traditions as well, I found out that I'm for 25 years my parents and I lived a life that was just fake. You know, they were just the birds that stuck their head in the sand and just acted nothing ever happened. But the abuse really affected my life so much that I just can't pretend that this didn't happen. And So I went to therapy and I did EMDR therapy, and one day my mom asked, "Why are you going there? Did we do something wrong? And I'm like, "What? You don't know?" You know? I'm like really flabbergasted, and I really had to cry, and I'm like, "Shit, I have to confront her with this because I want to be an open book, and I'm not gonna lie anymore, you know, program of honesty." And So the week after or so, I went to my mom and said, "Well, Mom, I'm just wondering, why are you saying that? Because I thought you knew what happened 25 years ago." And she said, "Yeah, I knew, but I just hoped that you would forget." And then it found out that she didn't know everything. She knew that my dad just told her a story that he tried to not be the monster. He tried to be, "This has happened, but that could be happened to anybody, and it's not that bad. Maybe she not really, remembers it." And but she didn't know the whole story. And my dad was in India at the moment for work. And when he came back, my mom said, "Yeah, I'm going to confront him." And she says, "Well, if it doesn't react right, then it's all over, you know." I'm like, "Hey, thank God, you know, she's really getting it." But he landed, and my mom should call me, but she didn't. I was like, "Oh my God, my dad did something to her." But no, yeah, he did something to her. He just told his story again, and she believed him again. So there I was, with no believing parents again. And but this time I didn't accept that behavior, and chose for myself. And it was very difficult to realize that I missed so much love from my parents. It's difficult to see my mom in the same situation that I was 10 years ago with my ex-boyfriend, because she was doing the same thing as I was doing. But with the program, I'm able to see them as sick people. And I have a program and they don't. And thanks to the program, I made amends to my brother. I have a brother. And I didn't have any contact with him at all I did have some contact, but not much, because of my dad. Because he told my brother different stories than what happened. I was like a teenager, and I was yelling sometimes, "Yeah, what you've done to me!" And then he said to my brother, "Why is she saying that? Because I don't. She hates me because I didn't do this and this for her." And so he made a story up, and my brother believed my dad and not me. And when I made my amends to my brother, he was very sorry that he didn't believe me, and. He was behind me, and he was shocked because and angry, and I know it's for 24 years, but he doesn't. He has a son, so for him it's really like, "How could you do this?" And but he's really respectful and loving towards me, and now I have a relationship with my brother that I couldn't even dream of having with my brother, because I really have my brother back in my life. I'm also trying to rebuild a healthy relationship with my mom, even though she's sick. So it's very difficult and very hard for me. I also have a cousin who is an addict. Even both the brothers, and one died of cancer when he was 27, and the other one was 37. But he was had psychosis. And he was finally open after 10 years for help at the clinics, but it came too late. Thank you. I didn't see him for 10 years. We had a really nice a connection, of course. He reminded me really of my ex-boyfriend, but we didn't. I tried to help him when he had no home. I rented a place for him on my name, helped him decorate the place, and I just had one condition, and that was stop dealing drugs, you know. But he didn't. He even put the attic full with weed, he rented the place to someone else, at that time I thought I was helping him, but and I was really mad at him. How could you do that to me? You know, I was trying to help you and you didn't do anything. He was the kind of guy who ran if there was conflict, so he ran, and I didn't see him for 10 years. And now I have the program, and now I just see, you know, that I didn't help him, and I, but that he needed help, but I can't help him, you know, he had to come by himself. And then 10 years later, he comes by himself and asks, hey, you know, do you want to meet up? I'm like, wow, after 10 years, I'm really proud of you, you know? And yeah, of course, I'm wide open. But then I panicked. You know, I'm like, oh my God, what does he need? Does he need money? Is he going to kidnap me? You know, I have been through so much with my ex-boyfriend that I was just afraid, because he was such a lookalike, I was afraid that he was going to do the same things as my ex-boyfriend. So I canceled the appointment, and he was like, oh, I don't understand what happened. And yeah, anyway, I called him a week after because I figured out what it was, and it was fear. I was driven by fear again. And honest fear? No, it was fake fear. You know, it was my disease again. It wants to try to keep me sick. And so I called him, and he didn't pick up because he was still angry. So I made him a text message that I explained that it was fear and it had nothing to do with him and blah, blah, blah. Then I called him again, and then he picked up the phone, and then I could explain, you know. And then I said, yeah, of course, I love you no matter what. I could tell him through the telephone. I said, we want to meet up. And I said, so yeah, just slow down. We have the rest of our lives, you know. And so just see what happens and just have some phone call contact. And the week after, it was in February, so it was Carnival. And I saw strange pictures on Facebook where crossing by. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe some distance would be good. and then I saw pictures of the motor club, No Surrender. I'm like, oh my God, what is he doing? I'm like, this is not good. And then I was looking at the Facebook, and it was 10:30 already, late in the evening, and I was just calling with a friend of mine, she's also in the fellowship, and I saw at his timeline, rest in peace. I'm like, what? What's happening? It appears that he jumped off the roof of a hotel, and not for suicide. He was doing suicide attempts in the hotel at that moment, but it didn't work, and he had to leave the room because he paid and stuff like that. But he had to check out, and he didn't want to, so he climbed out the window and upstairs, just he ran again. And then he slipped and fell or something. We don't know what happened, but I never had to see him alive. But I did have the chance to talk with him, and I did have the chance to be honest with my feelings, thanks to the program. You know, I did have the chance to tell him that I love him no matter what. And that really, that's all about the program, the fellowship. Eleanor gave me that. And I'm so glad, because I really love him, even though I didn't see him. I'd seen him for 10 years. And now I met his girlfriend. I didn't even met his girlfriend, but now, and she's still in my life. And she's really an amazing girl. And she can learn a lot from me, but I can learn a lot from her. And I'm just so glad that I get some other things in return. Then I can't control things. And now I know that now, you know, and if I did control things, then I didn't have the people in my life right now who are in my life. And I didn't have the opportunity to stand here right now. And now I feel really comfortable, actually. And I can go on and on, but I think enough is enough, and I do my best, and I can't tell my story. You know, I'm 34, and turning 34, and I can't tell my whole life story in 30 minutes. And So I think I did my best, and I'm out of information right now. So thank you very much for being here.